Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Tzadi Zayin. Okay, let's try to remember what's going on, because we've got some very difficult issues to deal with over here. Yesterday, Rabbeinu HaKadosh threw us a real curveball with this Mishnah, because, I mean, it makes out, like Mishnayos usually do, to be very straightforward, and it turns out to be extremely difficult to parse the cases and understand what's going on around here. So let's just review what happens. The Mishnah starts off with what itself turns out to be quite a chiddush, according to the Gemara, and that is that if you just throw something from one Rishus HaYachid into a Rishus HaRabim, or from a Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus HaYachid, you're chayiv. Why is this a new idea? Because we never learned anything before about throwing. Okay, it strikes you that that's not a big chiddush, because what's the difference? If I get the object from one Rishus to another, who cares how I get it there? So throwing should certainly be okay too. Then it goes on to a more complex case. The more complex case is where I throw it from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, and I do this with the Rishus HaRabim in the middle. Now, it's not clear what that means. Did I throw it within? Did I throw it within 10 tefachim of the ground, or did I throw it above 10 tefachim of the ground? Now that to throw within 10 tefachim of the ground raises one issue, which is kluta kamishahun chadamya. To throw it above 10 tefachim of the ground means that it's a completely new type of hotzah that we never heard of before. So if I throw it within 10 tefachim of the ground, I could understand that I'm doing both a yetziah and a hanoch. So the Gemara says that this is a machlok, the Mishnah says this is a machlok, is Rabbi Akiva and the Chachomi. So according to Rabbi Akiva, I'm chayiv in that case. I have no idea what the case is yet. And according to Chachomim, I'm potter in that case. And then it talks about a case. And it says, ketzad. Now that's very problematic, because that basically defines the case, and we don't really know that that's the case, because the Gemara is going to ask, is that the case? So let's forget about the ketzad for a moment, which may or may not be the definition of the opening of the Mishnah. And what we're going to talk about is a case. The case is, you live on opposite sides of Fifth Avenue, and you throw something from a porch on one side of the street to a porch at the same height on the other side of the street. So the halacha is that over there, for some reason, you would be potter. So apparently Zorek is potter if you go over the Rishus HaRabim. But then we learn that there's a whole brand new idea, and that is if you have two porches on the same side of the street, then it would depend. If you hand over something from one porch to the other porch, you would be chayev if it went over the Rishus HaRabim. But if you went over the street, it would be potter. And why, if you hand it over, would you be chayev? I mean, after all, handing over is not even chayev at all, even in a normal case, right? I mean, if you just go from Rishus HaRabim, if I hand you something, that was the case in the original Mishnah, and you're potter if you hand something to another person. And over here, we're talking about handing something over, which is l'malam yasara tvachim, so you didn't even do otzah mirishus rishus. I mean, this is totally crazy. Where do we come off with the idea that you could hand over from one rishus to another rishus, and there be more chayev than if you hand from rishus hachat to rishus rabim? Totally confusing. So the Gemara, the Mishnah insists that this is a new idea, and it's learned out directly from the Mishkan, from the fact that the Levim used to hand over from one of their trucks to another truck when they were parked one in front of the other on the same side of the street. That's what the Mishnah says. You could see that we are really being inundated with new information. We do not know how to understand exactly what the Mishnah is talking about. And because of that, today we're going to start examining this case about the Levim. But the Mishnah yesterday, the Gemara yesterday, utilized this Mishnah to start an examination of the entire nature of Melechus Hotzah. So what we discovered yesterday is that the very fact that the Mishnah talks about Zorek from one, which we thought was simple, why not, actually triggers a profound self-examination in the Gemara about, well, you say why not, but why not implies that we're talking about a tolda's relationship to an av, right? Every tolda has a svara that makes it similar to the av. That's all very nice if we know for a fact that Hotzah is an Av Malacha. How do we know that Hotzah is an Av Malacha? The Gemara then brings a Pasuk. And the Pasuk is that Moshe Rabbeinu tells people not to come anymore. Ish isha yasu od malacha l'trumat ha-kodesh v'yikaleya ami havi. And this is also very strange for two reasons. First of all, it's the wrong pasuk. We know that we often bring in the Gemara the pasuk al yetzei ish mimekomo, which we read as al yotzi ish mimekomo. Don't anybody bring anything out. So why in the world are we bringing this pasuk? And secondly, it doesn't say over here don't bring anything out. It says don't do any other malacha. And thirdly, why are we all of a sudden triggered to wonder about the question of who says that it's a malacha? Remember, that girsa of who says it's a malacha is the other girsa in the Gemara. Our girsa is Hotzah Gufa Hecha Ktiva. Where does it say anything about Hotzah? But let's assume for a moment it's the same question. Why was it only the fact that Zrika is told of Hotzah that would have triggered that question? And why did we bring the wrong thing? And why didn't we learn it out directly out of the Mishkan? So, remember that Tosfos in the beginning of the Masechet had said, we can't assume anything about Hotzah. The reason we can't assume anything is because it's a Malacha Geruah. And until we know that there is this extended concept of a Malacha that would include even the change in an object's spatial coordinates that have nothing to do with any internal change in the object itself, we would never have thought that that is a malacha. So we need an indication that that's a malacha. Okay, that's all very nice. Tosfos in the beginning of the Masechet says that the reason that we need both psukim, the al yotzi ish mimekomo, plus al yaseh ish v'isha yaseh od malacha, is because we need one for hachnasa and one for hotzah. So we would need one pasuk for the ani, and we would need one pasuk for the ashir. Why in the world would I need one pasuk for each if each one is a tolda of the other, or seems to be the same way to do the other? Well, it's because it's a malacha geruah, and that's where Tosfos defines that concept of a malacha geruah. You're not doing anything because you're not doing any work. And obviously it's not a function of work. No matter how much work you would carry around all day long, you wouldn't be over an hotzah. And nothing is changing in the object. So how do we define that as hotzah? Now that means that we have two psukim already up front. We already knew in the first Mishnah that there were these two things. Why wouldn't we have learned zrika from those two things right away? Because if we already know that there's a concept of the Isser of Shabbos called Hotzah from these two psukim, why wouldn't we learn out a Zrika Tolda from it? Now, this is where Rav Haigon comes to the rescue. And Rav Haigon says, because you may know that it's Usser, but you don't know that it's a Malacha. Because until the Torah calls it a Malacha, you would have no right to define the Zrika as an extension of the concept of Hotzah, because extensions of concepts are built on the notion of sets. But sets are malachas, not isurim. Isurim don't define sets. And therefore, until we find somewhere that the Torah actually uses the word malacha to define Hotzah, we would have no right to extend it whatsoever. Wow. And where do we find that the Torah calls it a malacha? Moshe Rabbeinu says the craziest thing. Nobody do any more malacha, and that is followed by the words, and the people stopped mevi'ing. They stopped bringing. What does that have to do with it? I told you not to do any malacha. Whoa. Apparently bringing was the malacha. Woohoo. So now we see that Hotzah indeed is a malacha. Once we establish it as a malacha, now we have a right to learn out Zrika from it. This is how the Rav Haigon explains it, which is brilliant. Now, Tosfos points out another amazing thing. This was in the opening on Daf Beis, which I promised you then we'll get into, but we have to wait until we get to Lazorik. Tosfos then points out another amazing thing, and that is, If it's a malacha, why do we need to find it here? It's called a malacha beferish, right? So then why do we need to use the Mishkan as a remez to where it was in the Mishkan? Because we say, where do we find Otsa in the Mishkan? And we start talking about the Heim Ha'alu. Whoa. Tosu says, the reason is, and this is absolutely brilliant, the reason is that if I would have known that Hotza is Aser and is defined as a Malacha, if I hadn't found it in the Mishkan, I would have completely reassessed what I mean by a Malacha. And I would have said a Malacha has nothing to do with the Mishkan. I would have explained the relationship in Parshas Vayakel to Mishkan Shabbos in a totally different way. And I would have been left with a broadly expanded notion of malacha that would include anything similar to hotzah, which is a malacha geruha, as a malacha. That would have completely changed our relationship to halacha Shabbos, says Tosfos. Therefore, it turns out the craziest thing, that the anomalous case in the Mishkan, which is the Levium that passed things over from one agala to another agala, turns out to be the reason that between the two issues, in other words, I know that the Torah calls it a malacha, and therefore I have a right to define one as a tolda of the other. Plus, I also know that this type of thing generally occurred in the Mishkan. So put the two together, and now I have a right to say malachas are indeed defined as things similar to the Mishkan. And the question is, which we will then engage in, how do we define the Av? Is the Av defined in particular A, or is it defined in particular B, which we discussed yesterday? So now what this leaves us with is a question of how far we can extend the Tolda. So as Tosis explains on yesterday's daf, if we say in the Gemara, this is a very important additional point. I'm only going through this because it's so fundamental in the entire understanding of the Masechet as a whole, which is built around exactly this issue of Hotzah because of the complexity of the interrelationship of the parts of Hotzah to the general nature of Malacha. So it behooves us, I think, to really spend an extra few minutes on it. So Tosfos says, the Gemara talks about Hachnasa. So it says, even though it says Hotzah, how do we know Hachnasa? And the Gemara says, well, we know Hachnasa because it's a Svara. If Otsam Rishus L'Rishus is the issue, so then what's the difference if it's from Rishus A to B, Rishus B to A? So Tosfos says, why would we need that Svara? As we've already established, the halacha of the Levium lifting up the Krashim and putting the Krashim into the Agalot is the mucker of Hotzah as a Mishkan-specific activity, that was Hachnasa. Because basically what they were doing was, they were taking from the Rishus HaRabim and lifting it into the wagon. But by putting it into the truck, you're doing Hachnasa. So why in the world would the Gemara ask, how do we know that Hachnasa is included? Tosfos answers, because, look, the problem is like this. The Mishnah said, well, you can't learn Zerika because they didn't throw it. That's what the Mishnah said. They only passed, they didn't throw it. Okay? So if you cannot, let's say they would have thrown it, I would have known Zerika too, right? So, okay, so then that means that that is a description of things in the Mishkan that I would have been able to learn. So Tosis points out, look, let me ask you something. Isn't it also a svara to say mali al yedei hotza'ah and mali al yedei zrika? I mean, if there would be no svara to extend the dinim of hotza'ah into zrika, how did the Mishnah know in the first place the first simple statement that we thought was obvious, that if you throw from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim or from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid and you throw and don't carry it, that you would be chayiv? How do you know that? Obviously, because it's a svara. I can't make something a tolda if it's not a svara. And nonetheless, we would not if we don't find it in the Mishkan, we're saying we would not have extended it, right? So it must be that we need a confluence of two things in order to establish something as chayev in the Mishkan. A svara alone is not enough. It must be that because it's a malacha geruah, it needs to be a svara that is linked to a particular case. That's the point. And therefore, hotzah, the concepts of hotzah, may be more limited in your ability to expand them than a normal malacha is, according to Tosus. Now, the importance of that idea is the following question. In the Mishkan, we talked about a case where you've got two trucks parked, one in front of the other. You're transferring from one truck to the other truck over the Rishus HaRabim. We said over there that if you threw from one truck to the other truck, you wouldn't be chayev. Why? If you're telling me that I have a right to expand the dinim of the malacha, and I'm able to say that if I carry from one to the other, mali al yedei hotza'ah, umali al yedei zrika. The Mishnah says that, doesn't it? The Mishnah at the beginning said, if you throw something, you throw a ball from your house into the Rishus HaRabim, you're chayev. How does the Mishnah know that? Obviously, because it's a svara to say that zrika is no different than carrying. Well, if that's true, why would zrika be different from carrying in the case of the passing of the korot from one wagon to the other? The fact that it was done al yedei, specifically hoshata, should not exclude me from learning out zrika. And if I do learn out zrika, then that would mean that if I throw a ball from one Rishus HaRabim, from one Rishus HaYachid, rather, to another Rishus HaYachid, with Rishus HaRabim in the middle, I would be chayev. Yet the case that's given in the Mishnah is that if I throw from one to the other, I'm putter. So we need to establish why I cannot learn out Zrika from the case of Hoshata. Now, these are all the things that are omed b'faneinu today, and let us therefore begin now and see whether is there, in fact, a possibility that we could learn out Zrika from Hoshata, and therefore be mechayev in the case of the two porches. Anyway, but first we have some nice agadata over here. We started yesterday. No, actually, we didn't. So we got up to the two dots on Tzadik Vav Amud Beit. Tana Rabban. Mikoshesh Zetzlafchad. So it doesn't say in the Torah who the Mikoshesh was, but the Mikoshesh must have been Zlafchad. V'chein u'amer, v'ayu b'nei Yisrael b'amidbar, v'ayim tzu'u ish Mikoshesh etzim. So Klal Yisrael finds these people, this person, who is being mekoshesh, we don't even know what that means, on Yom HaShabbat. So yesterday we saw that there were...
I'm sorry, I think we stopped a little bit earlier. You mentioned Megillah Starim, and like right after Megillah Starim, we had to stop.
No, we didn't. Okay. So yesterday we had a three-way machlokas about what the act of the mekoshesh was, and it was based on the shaila of whether there was a chiyuv skila on these three things. One was Hotzah, one was Ma'amer, and one was Tolesh, and we were using the Mekoshesh as a vehicle for expressing what we don't have to be Choshesh is included in the Suffolk of the Megillat Starim. Tana Rabbanan. So Mekoshesh Zetzlafchad. V'cheinu Ma'amer v'yibin Yisroel b'midbar v'yimtzu ish. And when the daughters of Tzlafchad explain what happened to their father, they use the word Avinu Meit b'midbar. So apparently that key word, Vayu b'nei Yisro, Bamidbar, with this Bamidbar, is Exereshava, and therefore must be Slavcha. So says Rabbi Akiva. Well, Marlo Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera, Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera was outraged that Rabbi Akiva should say this, because he said to him, Akiva, whether you're right or wrong, you're in big trouble. Because Atati Tanyatadin, let's say you're right. Why are you saying who the guy was when the Torah didn't want to say who he was? Okay? Atoraki sato, vata megale. It's not a right thing to do. And if you're wrong, then you're really in trouble, because then your mom is spreading Lashon Hara, which is Mitzi Shemra on a tzaddik. Well, I mean, I don't, it may not be a total tzaddik because he was made by Midbar, but he certainly is not to be called a Mechal HaShabbos, and you're doing Motzi Lazalotot tzaddik. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, what do you mean the Torah covered it? The Torah didn't cover it. It's a Gzeres Shavah. A Gzeres Shavah, you have a right, a chiyav, to be Doresh, which means that the Torah told you, with the word Bamidbar, that the Mekoshesh was Tzlofchad, right? No, Gzeres Shavah lo gamar. So Rashi understands Gzeres Shavah lo gamar means that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira had not been Mekabel this Gzeres Shavah, and therefore he was upset at Rabbi Akiva. Tosfos asks, does that make sense? Wouldn't he have been able to learn it from Rabbi Akiva? Because Rabbi Akiva was Mekabel it. So because of this, the Rabbeinu Tam says a general rule, and that is that everyone had a list of Gezeres Shavos that they had learned from, been Mekabel from their Rebbe, and there was a number, a specific number of Gezeres Shavos that they had a Kabbalah on, that let's say there's 5,621 Gezeres Shavos in the Torah. So they knew that number, and they could not substitute another Gezeres Shavah for one that they had been Mekabel. So he had no right to learn it from Rabbi Akiva. Okay, this is a fascinating approach of the Rabbeinu Tam. Not everyone agrees. And there's one way to get out of the whole problem, and that's the way the Oruch learns the situation here, and it means Rabbi Akiva did not learn this as a Gezeres Shavah. And Rabbi Akiva was only saying it as a drasha, but he did not have a Kabbalah to be Dorish by Midbar in this fashion. Anyway, if you hold that that he was not one, he was not the one who was in the Mekoshesh, so what were the children of Tzlofchad saying about him, that he died Bechet'o, that he was a member of this week's, coming week's parsha, at least here in Eretz Yisrael, problem. And that is the Ve'yapilu La'alot. So those people who attempted to go to Eretz Yisrael without the permission of Moshe Rabbeinu, he was one of them. We have the same kind of conversation about last week's parsha, this coming week to you, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry at Aaron and Miriam, and he walks or stalks away in anger. This means that Aaron also got sarat. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira here too. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira said to Akiva, you're in big trouble. Because if you're right, the Torah never said anything about Aaron getting saras, and you're saying something so ugly about Aaron, about, and if you're wrong, you're really in trouble. I don't know, but it says in the Pasuk, it says, Vayichar af Hashem bam. Bam means in both of them, Aaron and Miriam. So why wouldn't it mean that? No, because that only means that Hashem was angry at them, and that the very walking away was a nizifa. So a nizifa is like a slap in the face, but saraz ad kedekach, it doesn't say. Tanya command the omer af Aaron nitzareya, but the Braita says, like Rabbi Akiva, dechtiva yifen Aaron el Miriam, vihine mitzorat. Why does it say vayifen? What do you mean? He had to turn away? Why does he have to turn away? He's looking at it, at Miriam. No, it means malamed that he was pono mitzorato, that this was a madrega, that instead of caring about himself and his own tzarat, he turned towards his sister's pain. Omer Reish Lakish, hachoshed b'ksherim, loke begufa. L'maisa, we see from this whole sugya that someone who is choshed on someone who really should not have been choshed, he will be punished in his very body. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klal Yisrael is never going to believe in me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that Yisrael are ma'aminim, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Amarlo, Hein ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, on the contrary, they are the ones you can rely on to be faithful. But you're the one that's not going to be faithful. Ata in sofcha la'amin. Hein ma'aminim dichtiv, it says beferish. When Moshe spoke to them, it says v'yamin ha'am, they believed him. And how do we know that they are b'nei ma'aminim ve'emin ba'ashem? So that comes from Avraham Avinu. But you're not going to be a ma'amin. Shenema yan lo ha'amantem bi. You, in the end, Moshe and Aaron are told, you didn't believe in me. and because of that, you die. Anyway, how do we know that there was a loco of Moshe Rabbeinu for being chayshed that Ksherim bin Yisrael, that they wouldn't believe him? Put your hand in your inner pocket. Moshe Rabbeinu takes out his hand, and it is mitzorat kashalak. So you see that he was punished with tzorat for being chayshed b'nei Yisrael. Omar Rava, this of course brings the tzorat discussion full circle, starting with Moshe Rabbeinu himself, and then those who were chayshed in Moshe Rabbeinu. This is fascinating. Omar Rava v'temer Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina. You can see from here also that something good, a midat teva v'kadosh baruch hu, always gets there faster than something bad. Because by the bad news, it says, Vayotziah, he takes his hand out, meaning he took it fully out, Vinei Adom Mitzorat Kishalek. But when it came to the good news, Hashem said, put your hand back in. Then it says, Vayotziah Micheko. He's just starting to take it out of his jacket pocket. Vinei Shava Kibisoro. Micheko, Hu Deshava Kibisoro. Was it that instant as it came out? Not when it came out completely, but as it was coming out. Each part of the hand that came out, Micheko, was cured already from Tzorat. And then it ends with the story after he does the nes in front of them. It says, Vayivla mate Aharon et matotam, that Aaron's mate swallowed up all of their matot. Omar Rabbi Elazar, this is a nes betoch nes, because it doesn't say that Aaron's snake swallowed their snakes. It says that Aaron's mate, after it was already a stick, it swallowed the other sticks. So it was a double mace. First of all, a stick should swallow. And secondly, that there was no change in that stick. It was able to absorb everything that they did. Anyway, now let's get to our Mishnah. And the Mishnah talked about the case of somebody who throws from one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid, and there's a Rishus HaRabim in the middle. Now, assuming that the Mishnah did not say Ketzad, because that's the only way that we can ask this question, because if it said Ketzad, then it means the Mishnah itself had defined the case of the Machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbonan as being the case of two porches on the 53rd floor across the street. Obviously, it wasn't Betoch HaSara of the ground. So let's ignore the Ketzad in the Mishnah. So Rabba wants to know, there's two completely different ways for me to understand the Mishnah. One way to understand the Mishnah is that Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan are arguing about somebody who is expanding on this case of Zrika from a Rishus HaRabim to a Rishus HaYachid, a Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, and is talking about a case, the same case basically, except that in this case, he's throwing it all the way across, because it was out of the window of his house, all the way across the street, into a window of another house across the street, and it was within the 10 tefachim of the ground. And because of that, he did this in Rishus HaRabim's area, because remember, Rishus HaRabim extends up to 10 tefachim above the ground. And then the question would revolve around the old question that we've brought up so many times in this Masechet, is Kluta Kemi Shehuncha, something that is within the airspace of another Rishus, can we view it as being at rest in that Rishus or not? Now, we have very many variations of Kluta Kemisha Uncha. The most daring variation is this one, where it's moving above three tvachim of the ground, but within the airspace. It never ends up landing in Rishus HaRabim because it goes straight into the window across the street of another home. Nonetheless, it may well be that Rabbi Akiva is Mechayev, because he holds that once something is in the airspace, it's considered to be at rest in that space. Wow. The other cases that we had were much less dramatic. Another case of Kluta Kemisha Uncha would be where the object came to a rest in terms of relative to the ground, it's no longer moving because the object was a sticky fig, and it came to rest on the side of a wall. The side of the wall was still in the Rishus HaRabim. So over there, there would be not a question of something moving, still being at rest. No, that much we wouldn't say. But something being at rest vis-a-vis the ground in the air and not on anything, that would be another level of Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya. Yet a third level of Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya would be if something is within three tvachim of the ground, therefore it's considered to be lovud, and it's moving along that area. So perhaps since it's lovud, that would be a greater reason to say it would be Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya. Another issue of Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya would be, this is a fourth level, since it is moving, one cannot call it munach, but suppose it would stop for a moment and hit something and then bounce off and keep moving. The thing that it hit was not a mokum arba al arba and therefore should normally not be considered to be hanocha, but since it would be within three tvachim of the ground, I would call it kluta kabishuhun chadamya. The fifth issue of Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya, these are all differences that Tosfos puts out in different places. The fifth issue of Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya would be where it's rolling along the ground. And over there, since it's constant contact with the ground, because we could view rolling as a series of, an infinite series of coming into new touch, would be an old calculus issue, right? That each part of this thing is always in touch with the ground as it's rolling along the ground. And therefore, over there, I would say, it would be Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamya, even though it continued rolling on, gathered no moss, and ended up in the house across the street. Okay, that we would have to see. But this is the most dramatic of all of the possible Kluta Kabishuhun Chadamyas. So Rabbah is questioning whether that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying. You're chayev. You know why you're chayev? Because when it came out of Rishus HaYochid from your window, and it passed over Rosh HaSarabim, it already was a hotzah from Rosh HaSarabim to Rosh HaSarabim. Then when it continued moving into the other house, then it was a new hotzah, or actually hachnasa, from Rosh HaSarabim to Rosh HaSarabim. Maybe that's what Rabbi Akiva was saying. And the Rabbanim were saying, no, I mean, if it never came to rest, there was no hanacha. So then I would understand the machlokas to be the Marsav Ramlin Kluta Kamishun Chadamya, and Marsav Alarmin Kluta Kamishun Chadamya. But if it was above 10 Tvachim in Rosh HaSarabim, of course it would be Potter. Now, why would it possibly be Chayev? Now, wait a minute. It might possibly be Chayev because if I hadn't thrown it and I had passed it from one wagon to another wagon over Rosh HaSarabim, I would have been chayev, wouldn't I? So maybe I can learn out throwing something from passing something. Because we already had this svara of learning zorek, if it's an issue of being zorek from one rishus to another, from carrying. So if I can learn zorek from carrying, why can't I learn out zorek from passing? And maybe that would be the question. Do we have a right? Now, here would be another fascinating issue, gentlemen, because this new din of passing, even though it was a fundamental process where we find Hotzah in the Mishkan, note that the Melocha is not called Al Shem Hoshata. The Melocha, as the Gemara clarified yesterday, is called Hotzah. Then that would mean that Zorek is a tolda of Hotza'ah, correct? But when it comes now to the Hoshata, Hoshata itself is an expanded tolda of the concept of Hotza'ah, correct? Can I learn out from a tolda a new tolda? Now that is a fascinating issue. If the tolda required a specific, and this is only by Hotzah that we find this, as Tosis explained, the tolda would have been insufficient to derive from the Av just because it was a Svara. I needed to actually see it in the Mishkan at some level. Then and only then can I expand the tolda of Hotzah because it's a Malacha Geruah. So I would need a confluence of both a Svara and an indication of an event. Zurika, I do not have an indication of an event, but I was able to learn it out directly out of Hotzah because Hotzah was called a Malacha. And therefore the Pasuk essentially allowed me at the beginning of this sugya to derive Zrika from Hotzah. So now we're faced with an amazing kind of issue. Once I do have an indication that I can expand Hotzah into a tolda called Hoshata, can I also expand the Zerika that was learned out from the Malacha of Hotzah into this Hoshata and say, well, Hoshata can be done via Zerika? Now, that is a very profound question of the interrelationships in general and the nature of sets that are defined by Malachas. That may well be an issue over here. Maybe, says Rabbah, but maybe nobody even considers that possibility. No, we certainly would not learn out Zorik from that case. Or, perhaps on the contrary, maybe we're only arguing about Lamala Me'asara. And the machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbanan is specifically that issue of the nature of the sets of Malachas of Hotzah. And they're arguing about whether you can learn out Zorik Mimoshit. Rabbi Akiva learns you can learn Zorik Mimoshit, and therefore you would be chayev if you threw from the 53rd floor across Fifth Avenue to the other 53rd floor porch, because I learned that out from Moshit. Whereas the Rabbanan would be saying, no, you cannot learn Loyafin and Zorik Mimoshit. But if indeed the transference was going on through Zerika, Lamata Miasara, maybe everybody would agree. Maybe the Rabbanan would agree too to Rabbi Akiva that you would be chayev. Why? Because even this maximum Klutak Mishuncha may be something that the Rabbanan agreed to. Omer Rav Yosef, look, that's a great question. It's obviously the central question of the Mishnah. And Rav Chista was asked this question before you, and Rav Hamnuna answered it and proved his answer from the following braita. Mirashut hayachid, lirashut hayachid, v'over b'rashut harabim atzma. Now here is the added word. Nobody ever talked about rashut harabim atzma, did they before? Atzma can only be adding that it's within the airspace of the rishus harabim, and therefore it is within asara tvachim. And it says over here, Rabbi Akiva chayev v'chachamim potrim. Now, if it throws in the word rishus harabim atzma, pshita lamata mi'asara plige, so obviously they are arguing within the asara tvachim. And I ask you to tell me, what do you think we're talking about over here? A case of carrying with your hand or a case of throwing? I mean, it's obvious to me what the case is, because b'mai, ilei b'mai ma'avir, if it's talking about a guy was carrying something and he is lamata me'asara, you would be saying that's what it's talking about, not zrika, because it doesn't say zorek over here. It just says mirushut ha'yachid l'shut ha'yachid. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. There's no way it's talking about that he would be ma'avir. Because then what you would be saying is that only if you were holding your hand within 10 tefachim, but if you had your hand up in the air, that then you, which is l'mala me'asara, if you had at the level of your shoulder, you would not be chayev. That's what you would be saying. But that is not true. Because Amar Rav Elazar, ha'motzi ma'asui, remember that we had before that if somebody carries something and he's holding it above 10 tefachim, in Rishus HaRabim, he's still chayev. And that we learned bepashtus out of the entire idea of the carrying of B'nai Kahat. El alav bezorek. So then we're talking about throwing, and we find that Machlokas over here is within 10 tefachim, because it says Rishus HaRabim atzma, and only lamata me'asor u'demechayev. Nobody says anything about being chayev lamala me'asora, shema mina, and that answers your question, dear Rabbah. Obviously, the Machlokas in the Mishnah revolves around the issue of Klutik Mishun Chedami and nothing else. Now, in saying this, Rav Amnuna was arguing with Rebbe Lazar's interpretation, because Rebbe Lazar says that no, actually, Rabbi Akiva was Mechayev even above Ten Tvachim. And the only reason that it says over here the word Atzma to indicate that you're within Ten Tvachim is because we wanted to make it clear that the Rabbanan argue even if it's within Ten Tvachim, because they don't hold of Kluta Kamishuncha. But Rabbi Akiva holds, in either case, if it's Lamata Me'asora, you'd be Chayev anyway because of Kluta Kamishun Chadamya. And if it's Lamala Me'asora, then it's similar to Hoshata, and I'm able to learn Zorik from Moshit. So the way Rebbe Lazar is understanding it, actually the binary issue that was introduced by Rabbah is wrong. Rabbah takes for granted that either the Mishnah is arguing about Klutik Bishulimcha, or the Mishnah is arguing about Yafin and Zorek Mimoshin. Wrong, says Rabbi Lazar. They're arguing about both. And the only reason that the Braita specifies Atzma is to tell me you should know how stubborn these Rabbanan are, that they hold your potter because they don't even hold the Klutik Mishulimcha. So even if it was Lamata Miatzara, they would have argued on Rabbi Akiva. Lodiach HaKochan DeRabbanan. And by the way, that also disagrees with the way Rabbi Chilkiah Bar Tuvi, this Rabbi Lazar, is very dramatic. He's arguing on Rabbi Amnuna's interpretation, which works out according to Rabbah. And he's arguing also on Rabbi Chilkiah Bar Tuvi, because Rabbi Chilkiah Bar Tuvi says, now hold on a second, if we are talking about Klutik Mishulim Chadamya, let me tell you something. If it would be within three tvachim of the ground, so if it was Tosh Losha, everybody would agree that you would be chayev over there, even though it's still moving. If it's above 10 tvachim of the ground, everyone would agree it's potter because we do not learn out Zorek from Moshit. And the only machlokus over here is the small area between 3 tvachim above the ground and 10 tvachim above the ground. And it's in that window that we find the machlokus between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan about whether we extend the din of Klutik Mishulim Chadamya into that area as well. So there, Banan l'machlokus Rabbi Akiva v'Rabbanan. So basically, we have two fundamental ways of understanding the Mishnah, and we also have a clarification of where it is that we would say Klutik Mishulim Chadamya, where we might run into a machlokas of Klutik Mishulim Chadamya. Okay, this is getting to be tremendously information dense, so I'm hoping that you'll have a chance to review this. There's an awful lot of sugyas. As I mentioned to you earlier, this perek is basically the concentrated form of the final understandings that we're reaching about the nature of Otsah. It needed to wait until the additional material of Zerika and the Oshatav, the Levium, and then the full analysis of how that was done in the Mishkan was brought to the fore before we could even begin to really understand how much is involved in the nature of Otsah. Now, Tanya Namiarki, there's a Braita that supports this interpretation, and that is that there's a difference between 3 and the area between 3 and 10, that betok sholosh, if you're sholosha rather, within 3 tvachim, divrei akol chayav, lamala mi'asara, over there, eino ela mishum shivut. Actually, there would only be an iser of derabbanan to be transferring it from one rishus into another, throwing it from one rishus into another. What would that be? Nothing to do with hotzah directly. It would be because you're not allowed to go next door, from one door to the next door, if it belongs to somebody else, unless you made an Erev. That's the Shavus over here. It's nothing to do. That's not an Erev that we talk about, which is an Erev that's made in a city to turn it into Rishus HaYachid. This is an Erev Chatzerot that we're talking about, where two separate homes can be viewed as belonging to the same person. Okay. And because of that, if you've got two houses and you own both of those houses, then there'd be no iser at all. It would even be mutter to transfer from one house to the other house, and there would be no problem of its being lamala mi'asar of rishus harabim. And in the distance between 3 and 10, there we have a machlokas. Rabbi Akiva is b'chai because of klutik bishuncha, the chachamim pater. Now, by the way, you just raised this new issue that if there's no problem of ownership of the two Rishus HaYachids, that then it's mutter even lechatchila? Wow. You mean to say that in the case in the Mishnah where there's two porches across the street and I would own both apartments on either side of the street of Fifth Avenue, that I would be allowed lechatchila? Wow, that's amazing. So I could actually have a pulley system, make the cholent in one side of my house, right? And then pass it over to maybe my son-in-law's house who's living across the street. No, it has to be mine. Well, I never gave it to him, so I live there too. And I could pass it across the street. That's incredible. L'chatchila. Yeah. But then that should be a disproof of Rav. Because we know that Rav said, in a case where you've got two, you own two homes on both sides of the street, Rabba Baravuna Amar Rav, you're not allowed to throw from one side of the street to the other side of the street. And it was Shmuel who said you are. So how come Rav is now apparently arguing on the Braita, where it says that it's okay as long as you own both homes? He says, well, what's wrong with you? You don't remember how we understood that at Erevin? The case over there was that the porches were not on the same story. One was on the 53rd floor and one was on the 61st floor. That's why it was usher. So chadimid lechad and mitzechad. Because over there, we're worried that you're going to miss. So when you throw from one to the other, it's on the same level. That's a normal throw. But when you've got to throw from the 53rd floor to the 61st floor across the street, you're very likely not going to hit it. And then what happens? It falls into the street. Oh my God, that was my wife's diamond ring. Down you run into the street, pick up the ring, and bring it back into the house, which of course would be mechayev of you because of Achnasa. We're not worried about the ring falling because obviously you were being misasek and doing something totally different and never wanted the ring to fall into the Rosh Hasharab, and that's not us, sir. Now, continues on, now that we've raised this issue of three tefachim from the ground as a new idea of everyone agreeing that klutas kamisha und chadamya, so the Gemara wanted to know, what does that come from? So, where did the Rabbanim get that from? That anything that is within three tefachim of the ground is considered to be part of the ground, and it's kalav adami. Omar Lay, he said, look, it's a simple svara, isn't it? I mean, do you expect a Rosh Hasharabim to be shaved down by a carpenter's plane? Or does a Rosh Hasharabim have like variations in height? I mean, there's a little hole over there for a sandbox, and there's a place over there where there was a little a mound or a hill. I mean, actually, Rosh Hasharabim should like Cape Malakit Britney. What do you want it to be? You want it to be planed down by a carpenter's plane? And that's like what? Where do you find Rosh Hasharabim that's going to be completely flat? So it's just as far as that's the normal variation, you know? So since that's the normal variation, it's all included to be basically the extension of the ground, wherever you are. Yeah, that is not acceptable. I'll tell you why. Because if you're only talking about a normal statistical variation, it's insane to say less than three. What do you mean less than three and not three? I mean, just say, okay, up to three tefachim, including three tefachim. I mean, come off it, man. And if it's 1 millimeter less than three tefachim, then already it doesn't work out, and we would not say it's love. But that's not the way we would have made a shear that is based on the simple sephora of having variations in height. I'm sorry. Saniyachi, shaloi shinami. Not to mention the fact that we have this concept of lovod in totally different places, which has nothing to do with your sephora. For instance, a guy is building a sukkah. Okay, the walls from his sukkah are being lowered down from the top, and he's lowering them or making them, whatever, they're on a roller, or he's actually weaving them, by the point where they come into three tefachim. If they're three tefachim or above, the sukkah is puzzled because the wall hasn't reached the ground. But if they go 1 millimeter more, and now they're within three tefachim, all of a sudden the sukkah is kosher, all right? What does that have to do with Rosh Hasharabim not being flattened with a carpenter's plane? We're not in Rosh Hasharabim, darn it. We're in your backyard. So you're talking about a sukkah. Where would that come from? So Hossam there says, well, that's a different svara. Hainu taima bishom davila mechitzasha agedim bok imba. That doesn't have anything to do with lava. It's not because the wall is within three tefachim of the ground. No, it's logistical. Because since you often have cats and things like that or gedim in your yard, a wall that allows these little animals to cut through into your sukkah is not called a wall. So it's mishum davila mechitzasha gedim bok inba, and that's not looked at as a wall. Ah, come on. It's not true. What about all the lovets that we say in the other direction? That's because we're talking about a lovod. It says you're able to build a wall for a sukkah or for an eruv. You can build it even with strings as long as you have less than three tefachim between each string, right? So basically, you build a full wall, which is invisible, because you're using these nylon strings, but each one is within three tefachim. What does that have to do with Gedi'im Bokimba? Or what about the fact that when you take the wall and it's not gotten up to the ceiling yet? Or what about where the schach is more than three tefachim away from the wall that it's supposed to be attached to? There ain't no Gedi'im up on the roof. So what does that have to do with your supposed shear of Gedi'im? Ma'ikal Amema. You're wrong. The din of Lovad is Alok L'mesh Sinai. Ko pachot mishlosha is considered to be lavadami, is a halacha gemirila, and is not because of the specific way in which it's defined in these circumstances. Okay, Tan Rabbana, what about a case where you've got a Rishus HaRabim on one side, Rishus HaRabim on the other side? And this is the opposite of the case that we had before, which is the Mishicha from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaYachid with Rishus HaRabim in the middle, where the only basis of that was the Levim and the Hoshatav, the Levim, of the B'nai Merari. And that's interesting. So far, we've learned out from both B'nai Kahat and B'nai Merari. Dinim about the Rishus HaRabim, right? From B'nai Kahat, we learned that since they carry Bekatev, obviously carrying can be Lamala Miyasara. Okay, but moving on, how about the opposite case? Let's substitute Rishus HaRabim for Rishus HaYachid and pass between one Rishus HaRabim and the other Rishus HaRabim by going through Rishus HaYachid. And the most common case of this would be a kid is playing ball, smashes the window on one side of your house by throwing it from the street. It goes straight through your living room, smashes the window on the other side of your house, and comes out to his friend who's on the other side, who catches it and yells, "Strike!" So what would be the din over there? Is that ball actually, did you do? Ah, I see. Now we got Yedidya's interest over there. Come on back, Yedidya. So, is that considered to be also a Yitzia and a Hachnasa? I mean, that's not going to be similar to the B'nai Merari, right? And what would be the din over there with the Rishus HaYachid in the middle? Rebbe says you're Chayev. The Chachamim say you're Potter. Now, Rav and Shmuel explain, and we had this before, that only the reason that Rebbe says you're Chayev is because in this particular case, you have passed through a house, and a house is considered to be fully enclosed as if it's a solid stop. So it's a Rishus HaYachid that has a roof. And there we say Beta Kamande Malya Dami. But if it was just a defined area as Rishus HaYachid because the Mechitzah is on either side, he never would have said that it's considered to be Klut Kamishun Chadamia in that case. Omer of Chana, Omer of Yuna, Omer Shmuel. Actually, in that case, Rebbe would be Mechayev you two separate Chiyuvim. And one would be because of a Hutzah, and one would be because of Hanocha, of a Hachnasa. Because when you threw on one side, you went into the house, and if it was a Rishus HaYachid Mikorah, it would be Munach, so to speak, in that house, despite the fact that it's moving. So this is like the ultimate post Kluta Kamishun Chadamya, but that's only because it's considered to be a gel. The whole house is like a gel filled with ether. So, you know, if we could live with that long enough, we could live with the gel in Rishus HaYachid. So Rebbe would basically be saying that you would be Chayev twice. Once it lands in the gel, and then as it makes its way through the gel, and of course the speed of a ball through a house is different than the speed of a ball in a vacuum, it must be. So when it got to the other side of the house, it was now ochre itself from the gel in the house and came out on the other side, and in that case you would be doing both Hachnasa and Hotzah. Yosef Rav Chana v'Kakashele, wait a minute. If you're telling me that, then you're telling me that Rebbe is Mechayev two separate Chiyuvim, one on the Tolda and one on the Av. But I thought you can't be Mechayev on a Tolda b'mokam Av. And over here we said that the Hachnasa was a Tolda and the Hotzah was a Rav. It was an Av. And Lameh Medechayev, Rebbe, I told him b'mokam Av. Tanya, Rebbe, Omer, remember who was the one that told us the whole drasha of Elu HaDevarim. Devarim, Hadevarim, Ela Hadevarim, remember, equals 2 plus 1 plus 36 equals Lametes Malachas, Shenem Lemosh Misinai. And the whole point of darshaning the Lametes Malachas was to tell me the maximal number of Chatot that you be Chayev Behelam Echad. Omar Le Rav Yosef, you know what got you mixed up? You're mixed up because you learned this whole mimer of on that Rav Yehuda said on Rebbe. Therefore, it was a contradiction of Rebbe to Rebbe. But we heard this whole story was about Rebbe Yehuda And therefore, since we never saw anywhere that Rabbi Yehuda did say that you're not chayav and atol b'makom rav, b'makom av, we have no problem. The Tanya, mirishut hayachid lirishut harabim v'avar arba amot b'rishut harabim. It's basically the same idea, I think. Look, I mean, we're talking about over here going from rishus hayachid into rishus harabim, and once the ball goes into rishus harabim, it continues moving along rishus harabim for another arba amos. Right now, those are two different things. One of them is Mirishus Lirishus, and one of them is a Mavir Arba Amis Mirishus Harabim Bizrika. And the question over there is, would you be Chayev or not? Now, Reb Yehuda says you're Chayev, the Chachamim say you're Potter. And this is where we learned, Reb Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that obviously you're Chayev because you went from Mirishus Hayachid to Mirishus Harabim. So what kind of Machlokas is there over here? The Machlokas is over here is whether you're Chayev twice. So when Reb Yehuda says you're chayev, he meant you're chayev once for getting it out of the house into the Rishus HaRabim, and yet again for allowing it to move on Arba Amis in the Rishus HaRabim until it now settled onto this new location in Rishus HaRabim, and therefore you are now also chayev on being Zurich Arba Amis Rishus HaRabim, and it was therefore one was because of Hotzah, and one was because Havora Arba Amis Rishus HaRabim. Because, I mean, if you're going to tell me Reb Yehuda was b'chayev only once, how could the Rabbanan say you're not even chayev once? You definitely took it out from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. So that's the way we heard the Machlokas, and that made perfectly good sense, because ain't a chinami. You're chayev twice, and I told him, Amakamav, where does Reb Yehuda say he doesn't hold to that? Maybe I'll take Reb Yehuda, who says that? Mimai, what makes you say that that is what we're talking about? Couldn't it simply be that the idea would be that actually they're arguing about whether there is a chiyuv or not? And actually, I'll tell you that Reb Yehuda, it says you're chayev, meaning you're chayev once. The Rabbanan say that you're potter totally. What? How could you be potter totally? Very simple. Echemash kachasla, kagon de omar ad de nafkele l'rishut harabim tanuach. That the guy said when he threw the ball, he said, I want it to land right there as soon as it gets into Rishus HaRabim, and it didn't. So since it didn't, because of that, we would say that he was simply not able to be Mechayev because it was not Naseh Machshavto at all. That was the problem. And because of that, he's stating that they're Potter. And Hechemash Kachach, welcome in Africa, Rishus HaRabim Tanuach. What's the Machlokas, therefore? Welcome, Ifli. Rabbi Yehuda, Savar Amrina Kluta, Kamishu Hun Chedamya, this Avdalei Machshavto. Reb Yehuda says, well, it did land. I mean, landing means that it should be Munach. It's Munach. What do you mean? It's still moving. No, because if you hold Kluta Kabishul Chadamya, so then that would be where it landed in Rishus HaRabim. So you're Chayev. You're Chayev once. And that's all. Mashenke, if Rabbanan hold lo Amrina Kluta Kabishul Chadamya, so then lo is Avdalei Machshavto. And you did not get done what you wanted to get done. Avala told him a mokamav. Where do you get the idea that Rabbi Yehuda was mechayev and I told him a mokamav? There would be no way to say that. Lo mechayev, Rabbi Yehuda says, that cannot be true. Because we know that Rabbi Yehuda said this weird thing before. Remember when we were talking about the number of malachas? At the very end of that sugya, Rabbi Yehuda added, Mosif af hashovet v'amidagdek. So somebody who was using this stick, the karkar, to be shovet, and that would be that he was banging on the warp threads to make them separate, or he was medakdek, which is after the chut of Erev is already in, you bang in a couple of places to smooth it out so that it's even, and he added the chiyuv on that. And the chachamim would say, no, what do you mean? There's no separate chiyuv on that. Shovet areu b'chlal mesach, and midagdek is michlal oreg. Now, I mean, I'm assuming that when Reb Yehuda is mosif, he means that he is mosif a chiyuv of a chatas, which means that he would hold the shulchayev separately for mesach and shovet, and oreg and midagdek, which would mean that he does b'chayev on a tolda m'mokom av, right? No, of course not. Mimai, first of all, why would you say that? The simple meaning of the sugya over there, as we're going to see, and as we learned it at the time, is that he did each one of these things on their own. Avdol halachuda, halachuda. Maybe Reb Yehuda is not mechayev atolda b'makam av. The only reason that Reb Yehuda was saying your chayev is because Reb Yehuda was being mosif two additional avos, not that these are toldos, and that was good for the machlokes that Reb Yehuda did not buy into the Elah HaDevorim. Because of that, whatever he saw as being choshev in the Mishkan, he was listing as a separate malacha. And the machlokes is Reb Yehuda Savrahani Avot Ninu, Rabbanit Savrahani Toldot Ninu. Of course, that's the pshat. For God's sake, read what it says. Diktani, Reb Yehuda Mosif. What do you mean Mosif? If you're going to tell me Mosif, that he's being Mosif, the Ovos, fine, okay. So in my Mosif, he's adding a vote to your Lamet Tet Melachot. But if you're going to tell me Toldot, what is he being Mosif? You're never Mosif anything. Toldot are infinite. So my Mosif, Itmar Nami, Rabbi of Rav Yosef Amar Tavayu, obviously, Lochi of Reb Yehuda, Ella Achat, in the case where he threw it out of the Rishus HaYochid, into the Rishus HaRabim, and it continued moving. Not the way you were learning in Shmuel, that we were referring to two separate Chiyuvim. Omer LeRavina LeVervashi, I didn't even understand the whole business. I mean, you said before, according to Reb Yehuda Meshmuel, you were applying that mimer to Reb Yehuda, and that Reb Yehuda was going to be Mechayev twice. I don't understand. How could you be chayev twice? I mean, either you wanted the thing to land where it entered Rosh Hashanah, or you wanted it to land at the end. I mean, you said that the guy specified, that would be the only reason why, according to the Rabbanan, you'd be potter. So then, by the same virtue of specification, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could always only be chayev one anyway, right? So if he wanted it to come to a Hanukkah at point A, then why is he chayev when it comes to Hanukkah again at point B? And if he wanted a point B, then why was he chayev as soon as it went into the Rosh Hashanah at point A? I don't get it. Ilacha kabayle, lacha lo kabayle. The ilacha kabayle, lacha lo kabayle. Omar lei, ba'omer kol makom shetirtzeh tanoach. That's not a problem. We were only limiting the chayev because the guy made a specific goal where he was throwing the ball in the ball game or whatever. That's not the standard situation where you want to simply transfer something from one rishus to another. So if you're open to transferring it from one rishus to another, then it's lefid da'atcha, wherever it's going to go. So that was what we thought. There was talking about two separate chiyuvim based on kluta kamisha unchadam. Now, the question is, of course, that this raises. Remember, according to the Rabbanan, we were talking about you wouldn't be chayev. Why? Because it didn't land where you wanted it to land. So it landed further on. Now, let me get this straight. Suppose you ended up, doing more than what you thought, or less than what you thought. I mean, wouldn't we sort of view a malacha as consisting of the separate parts? So like, let's imagine a case like this. A guy was nitkaven lizrok shmona. He wants to throw it for 8 amot. And in the end, it comes to rest at the end of 4 amot, and it was a bad throw, okay? Now, it seems obvious, and we're going to say, even though we say here it seems obvious, in the end, we are not going to accept that this is actually true. So it's one of those rare occasions where we start with a pshita, and in the end, through the questioning of the assumptions, end up actually throwing out the initial pshita. So at this point, we think, look, if it's going to come to rest at the end of 4, of 8, and instead it came to rest at 4, that should be exactly the same as a guy who wanted to write the name Shimon. Now, he's in the middle of writing the name Shimon. He writes the first two letters, shame. Well, that's sort of a shame, isn't it? So the guy wrote the shame out of Shimon. This, of course, was the famous case we had before. It's actually a beautiful sefer that's called Shame Mishimon, based on this sugya. So he wrote Shame Mishimon. So, I mean, that is the first part of the malacha. And just because you wanted to write more doesn't mean that if you stopped at this point, you wouldn't be chayev. Because ultimately, I mean, how do we analyze the melechet machshevet element? Should not be that specific, that it's the specific thing you wanted to write if that thing included the thing that you did write in the first place, right? Because let's say that we want to even define Amlechus Bachshevas as saying the man wanted to write a name. Okay, fine. He wanted to write a name. He did write a name. He wrote shame. Are we going to say that because he wanted to continue writing a different name that would now turn shame into Shimon, so shame is not Amlechus Bachshevas? He knew he had to write Shin Mem in order to get the Shin Mem Vav, Shin Mem Ayin. So why wouldn't he be chayav in that case? It ought to be the same as writing Shem Mishimon. Same thing would be true of throwing 4 out of 8. On the other hand, if he wanted to throw it 4 and he ends up throwing it 8, what would be the din over there? Do we say ha'afikle? So we say, okay, but it did go by that place. So he took it out to that extent that it was 4 away. Or do we say, yechadaboy holo nach? He did not get it to the place where he wanted it because it was never nach. Wait, wasn't that what Ravina said to Rav Ashi a minute ago? And he said, well, it didn't land where he wanted it. And we had to answer, according to Rav Yehuda, that he didn't have in mind any particular place. That's what we said. Right? So that means that we specifically could only come up with a chiyuv in that case. And everybody accepted that. We only came up with a chiyuv because of the fact that the guy was open to wherever it would land. Nobody suggested that, well, I mean, you had to go through 4 in order to get to 8. I mean, nobody said that. And the only way that it would work was because of the open-endedness of his Zrika. Now, that would mean that if Lamaisa, he specifically wanted to throw it 4 and it never landed at 4, then we were saying he would not be chayav, according to Rebbe. That's what you just said. And you took that for granted. So then it's not the same as Shem Yishimon at all, for a very simple reason. You asked, Harekatav Shem Yishimon, Midami, it's not the same. If you didn't write the word shame, you are never going to be able to write the word Shimon, okay? What are you going to say over here? If you didn't throw something 4, it would never be thrown 8? That's ridiculous. It's not true. It's not? Of course it's not. Because remember that the idea of Hotzah includes Akira Vahanocha. It is not just a matter of something passing through a particular point. So there's no Zeno's paradox when we're talking about Hotzah. Over there, the only time that the Hotzah is completed is with the Hanacha. What are you going to tell me? Unless you threw something 4 amot, you can't throw something 8 amot. Nonsense. In which case, we were wrong to say lechatchila that it would be exactly the same as Shem Yishimon, which is another thing that is Meyachid, of course, Hotzah, as being different than the other Melachas.